Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen. I am GP. That is the Mammoths. This must be the Alt Review podcast. Joining me, as always, from Corpus Christi, Texas, Michael LaTorre. What up?
Well, dad sizzle it.
What?
I looked up some old-time curse words. Thanks, BuzzFeed.
Dude, seriously, you can't.
Yeah.
I don't even know what. Did. I don't even know what you just said.
Dad sizzle it means GD.
It means GD. You know how to say that on this podcast? You'll get us an explicit rating.
I didn't say that. I said dad sizzle. So.
No, I feel like. All right. You win. There's no arguing with you. There's nothing I can say to. It's whatever.
Yes.
All right, my man. We've got an interview on the line. Won't you tell me about who we've got on the phone?
So tonight we have Tristan, the fantastically talented artist, who's currently residing in Nashville. Tristan, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
We are
doing.
One at a time.
Yeah, well, we haven't mastered that yet. We've been doing this podcast together for, since October, and we still haven't figured that part out yet.
29 weeks?
30? Yeah, something like that, yeah.
30 weeks, something? Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, we're doing well.
All right, Tristan, I'm going to jump right in here. For those that have not heard of you, tell us a little bit about your musical background.
My musical background, I started doing music when I was very young, and when I went to college in Chicago. I grew up in Chicago, the south side of Chicago, in a little suburb called Lansing, Illinois, and then I went to college in the city, and I went to DePaul University, and then after I graduated, I to Nashville, and I started working on my first album, which is Charlatans at the Garden Gate, and that was my first label release, and that was in 2011. And so there's that record, and then I continued to tour and play music, and then I had another record come out, Caves, in 2013, and 2015 I played in Jenny Lewis's band for the year. I played keys and sang backup in her band, and then I came out with Sneaker Waves in 2017, and I think I'll have another record next year. It kind of takes me 2 years, or if I take time, if I do other things, it takes me sometimes 3 years. But, I guess that's not really my background, but that's kind of how I organize my past.
No, you're good. Hey, this is your interview. You can tell us whatever you want.
That's the timeline.
I like it.
Yep, I dig it too. So kind of related to something you were talking about there is, can you discuss a little bit the differences in your experiences from being a member of Jenny Lewis's backing band versus, kind of being an acclaimed solo artist in your own right?
Well, so the difference would be between being a side musician and then like a songwriter, band leader. And they're really two very different roles, when you're the songwriter and the leader of the band, I mean, you're deciding who plays in the band. You're responsible for putting out music and recording music and writing music. And depending on it's different for everybody. You're kind of at the helm, making sure that everything happens or doesn't happen, depending on what you want to do, where you're at, if you're on a break or if you're, you just put a record out and you're working it. And then being a side musician is, you're a hired gun. So you just kind of go in and you serve the songwriter, and your job is to, my job with Jenny Lewis is similar to what I expect the people in my band to do, or that's how I approached the job, which was learning the recordings, because that's what people listen to and what they get attached to. And when they go to see a live show, they need to be able to recognize a song. And part of that is capturing, I mean, you're never going to be able to replicate a record perfectly unless it was recorded that way. And a lot of times with songwriters, there's this process of construction. And there's a lot of different players involved and producers and all that. So it's really kind of the job of a side musician to interpret and learn. In this case, it was to learn the keyboard parts and the piano parts, and I played some guitar on a few songs and backing vocals. And in Jenny's band, there's at the time it was myself and Megan McCormick and Jenny, and we did a lot of three-part harmony, and Megan would do the low harmony and I would do the high harmony in three-part. And so I had to, you know, I'm kind of like more of a, when I write, I don't really usually have three-part harmony unless it's some kind of like instrumental ooh or ah thing. It's just kind of one of my habits. I'm kind of into the like Everly Brothers, Lubin Brothers, country, you know, two voices, you know, one harmony. But Jenny's music had a lot of three-part harmony because she toured for a while with the Watson twins, who are twin sisters, so there's a lot of three-part harmonies on the records, and so I was responsible for doing the high stuff, which was really fun. It's really awesome to sing three-part harmony. So I guess the difference between, like, what I do is that I'm, like, writing the music, they're my songs, they're like a part of who I am. I know them without learning them, and then being in someone else's band, I have to actually learn their music, which is not, I don't think, this my strong suit really, but I did it because I wanted to, because I say yes to things and, you know, opportunities and adventures, and I think that's a good way to be, and yeah, it was really cool.
That's awesome. That's a fantastic experience. And, you know, kind of to your point, on the one hand, you're creating with your solo work, and, you know, it's not so much of work per se, whereas, you know, you wouldn't look at it that way because you see yourself as an artist creating. Whereas when you're having to go in, like, this is what you learn. These are the harmonies that you have to complete. It's already laid out for you. It kind of does have a little bit more of that work tinge to it. So I definitely can see that.
It requires a different skill set. And so I think there are some people that are really amazing at being side musicians, and they can learn 30 songs in 2 days, and they can just go right in and bust it out. I mean, I know people like that. I work with them all the time in my band. That's what they do. But for me, it's not so easy for me, just because I'm a songwriter, and every instrument I've ever learned has been a way for me to write songs. Not necessarily, I didn't learn how to be a piano player by like learning how to play all the piano parts for a million different people's songs. It's not a part of my brain that gets worked out very often, but. You know, there's also something that's extremely easy about being a side musician, because there's no risk and it's never a reflection of you. Like, whether the show goes over well or not, it's no reflection on you. You're just sort of, you know, it's the difference between being the CEO or an employee. You know, there's just a difference in risk. It's more work to be the songwriter and like leading everything. But for me, I'm just so used to doing it that that's what I enjoy. I don't really get the same satisfaction out of being in other people's bands as I do out of like doing my own music. So it doesn't really matter like how many people I played for or how many famous people I got to hang out with or... you know, how easy the gig was, or that we were on a bus, and none of that, or that it's, you know, the first question I'm asked when I do a podcast. Or, you know, to me, it doesn't matter, like the profile and all that stuff didn't really feed me as much as, you know, doing my own music for, you know, 100 people in a small club. That to me like feels more like what I'm meant to do.
Sure. Sure. That makes sense too. Kind of a little bit related to that, to what you just said, what's your favorite aspect about performing live?
Well, the cool thing about performing is that it's not just you. It's kind of like you have energy of your band, and then you have the audience's energy, and you can get to this place where you're having this experience with like an entire room of people. And you can, when you do like an entire tour with another artist, or when you do a lot of shows, you see that certain parts of your show every night get the same reaction from everybody. Even when I was in Jenny's band too, there'd be certain moments in the set that every night, no matter where we were, the audience would really connect with it, and they would, you know, physically and vocally say, wow, you know, like you could feel it. And I think that it's interesting because, you know, these audiences aren't communicating with each other. It's just something that I want to say works, because that takes away from like how magical it is. And I know you guys have probably been in the audience when that happens. And so, you know, performing is amazing. You have to be in the room. There's all these videos on YouTube, and people are like, I don't need to see the show. I can watch the YouTube video. But the videos online, they don't have any vibration going on. It's like when you're in the room together, there's a vibration of the drums. You know, you can feel the drums, and you can feel the voice, and you can really tap into some other place and have this experience with like a room full of people. And that's, you know, when you have a good show, and it's the best feeling in the world for the audience and the performer too. It's the same. It's that same feeling. I just enjoy it. I really like singing. I like playing with a band. You know, it's really fun.
Absolutely. And I completely agree with you. I think that, you know, while it is cool to be able to see more of your favorite artists performing live on video and things like that, and seeing concerts on YouTube, that's cool and everything. It's never going to beat the presence of being there in the moment, as a collective, as the audience there with the musician. There's some kind of connection that happens there, hopefully, you know, with the musician. So that's very cool. So can you tell us a little bit about your songwriting process?
Well, my songwriting, well, that's a hard, very, very open questions here. We've got very open questions happening. Okay, my songwriting process, I think about what would make a good song pretty much every day. I come up with phrases and ideas, and I write them down, and then I elaborate on them. And then sometimes a melody just comes to me and the words come with it, and sometimes the melody just comes to me and I record that, and I sort of like keep track of ideas, stop what I'm doing, and I keep track of my ideas, and then usually if I just sit down to do it, I finish it right away. I try to make things rhyme. I try to make the ideas be something that other people can relate to, or that have some kind of distilled truth to them, whatever that means, you know, quote truth. And I try to talk about things that are important, ideas that maybe have already been passed down through time, or that I find profound, or I find help me cope with life, and that I think are worthy of being passed on. And I try to be clever. And that's my songwriting process. Really, it's different every time, but it's actually pretty interesting, because it's always been kind of easy for me to write songs, and so it's pretty natural, and so I don't really feel completely responsible. Some songs turn out really great, and I just know they're great, and some songs they're fine. They're good. They're just not, they just don't stand the test of time for me. So, you know, 3 months later, I'm sick of them. And then there are songs that I perform live that I can gauge whether people react to it or not. And some songs, for whatever reason, communicate to people, and I can tell. And those songs, I try to, you know, they live on. I mean, there are some songs in our set that we've been playing for 10 years that are still, you know, usually there.
I love the intentionality of that. You know, you're talking about you're wanting to not only rhyme, but you're wanting to be clever. You're wanting to be witty. You're wanting to have those aspects in that. And you're admitting, too, like, the process is going to be different every time. And I think that that's something that's cool that you embrace, you know, as opposed to forcing yourself into a set process. So it sounds like you're kind of just collecting it as it comes your way.
I'm just collecting words, really. yeah, I think that it's just something that isn't hard for me. I've been doing it since I was young, and I just have a knack for it. And so when I sit down to try to do it, I can do it. And so I do have kind of an objective look at it because it's easy for me to do it. I don't necessarily feel that it's mine. You know, sometimes I feel like the songs happen and it was just meant to come out that way. And they're easy. They just come out and they happen. And then they're... and I can look at a song now, or other people's music too, and say, this is what needs to change, or these lyrics, you know, this is what we need to fix on the lyrics to make it perfect in my eyes. And I've always been that way, even with, like, I produce my own records. I mean, I right now I work with my husband, and I've worked with him for the last 6 years. But prior to that, I produced my own records, picked my own musicians and all that stuff. And it's just like having a vision, I think. You have a vision, and you know when things are done. And you know what you like, and you know what you don't like. And I think a lot of people know what they don't like, but they never master being able to communicate what they do like. And I say that from personal experiences. That's how I became better, was learning how to communicate what I wanted and learning what was wrong with the recordings and how we needed to fix them. And, you know, taking a lot of that work into my own hands so that I could get the right drums, you know, the drums and the vocal are the most important things in a recording. So having the right drum beat, if you don't have the right drums, you can do whatever you want to the rest of the song, but it won't work.
One question that we like to ask all of the artists that we bring onto the show, it's kind of going to sound like a trick question, but I promise you that's not what I'm trying to do.
Okay.
We're more looking for, I guess, who your inspirations are. So with that being said, if you're putting together a dream lineup that you're going to play on, 5-6 acts that are going to play on the bill with you, who's playing with you?
They can be dead or alive.
Yep.
I like that. Well, this is very easy. It would be the Beatles, David Bowie, the Kinks, Dolly Parton. How many do I get?
That's your call.
Kate Bush, and let me think of who else. And Tom Petty. There you go. Is that 5 or 6?
I don't know, but that was a hell of a lineup.
Yeah, that's who I want to play with. That's easy. Those are like, I mean, there's like probably 10 more of equal that I like equally, that are equally influential. There's a lot of music that I've absorbed fully.
Very cool. So, Tristan, do you have any upcoming
projects? Oh, Bob Dylan. Sorry. Okay, Bob Dylan.
No.
Joni Mitchell.
Bob Dylan, I love
Bruce Springsteen. Bruce Springsteen. yeah. Anyway, sorry.
You're good. We got the ball rolling with that one, didn't we?
Yeah.
I dig it.
Like Lubin Brothers, like Roger lineup. Miller, Buck Owens. Sorry. Go ahead.
So do you have any upcoming projects or shows that you want people to know about?
Good question. I mean, I have some shows going on. I have quite a few shows. I have really kind of hitting the Midwest hard this summer. I have a show in Iowa City at Iowa City Block Party on June 22nd, and then I will be at Summerfest in Milwaukee on July 5th, and I will be at Mile of Music Festival August 1st through the 4th, and that's so far what we've announced, I believe, for the summer. And other than that, I have my new record that came out, Dream Within a Dream, 7-inch single, and I've got a cool t-shirt that I just put up, and you can hit my social media handle, which is Tristen, T-R-I-S-T-E-N, twice, and you can find out where to pick up a copy of those things. But it's pretty much everywhere. You can just Google, and that's a verb now. Just Google it.
Yes, Google did become a verb there somewhere. All right, the last question we have for you, Tristen.
Sure.
Can you tell us about adapting the poetry of Edgar Allan Poe for the track that we're playing tonight, which is Dream Within a Dream?
Sure. I love poetry, and I have a habit of finding poems and thinking they'd be great songs, or being in this mode where I just write a song to a poem I read recently. And so in my second record, Caves, I did a Boris Pasternak poem called Winter Night. And then I wrote a chapbook, and that came out in 2016. And from there, I found that poem, Dream Within a Dream, by Edgar Allan Poe, and it's a beautiful poem about death and how it... it's a pitiless wave. It's a wave without pity that will swallow us all. And it was a little bit apropos. My latest record, Sneaker Waves, is kind of on the same theme, where a sneaker wave is a wave that is much larger and stronger in force than the waves preceding it. And so when you're on certain beaches, there's warnings of sneaker waves because it might just come up and sweep you away into the ocean and kill you. Anyway, this song is about Edgar Allan Poe. It's about life and how it's a construction. And the refrain is all we see or seem but a dream within a dream. And it's about reality being a dream within a dream, and how no matter what, we all die in the end. And I just thought it was great, and I brought it to the band, and the band started playing the blues, and I started singing it, and it just happened, and we began playing it as like the closer to our set for a couple of years, and then we had a gentleman at a label email us and say, hey, I want to put this out, and so we recorded a version of it, and now it's out.
I dig it. It's absolutely fantastic, and we're really excited to highlight it here tonight.
I appreciate it.
All right, Tristen, well, that is all the questions we have for you. Thank you so much for your time this evening. I know you're probably pretty busy, so we really appreciate you taking the time out.
You know what? I'm actually right in the middle of watching Game of Thrones, and it's the last episode, and I didn't get to watch it last night because I played a show, but I'm like right in the middle of it, and I just don't know what's going to happen, and I'm very excited and a little bit depressed about my favorite character becoming super evil, or maybe always having been evil. Anyway, I hope I didn't spoil anything for you guys, but...
No, I have seen it, so I'm not going to spoil anything for you.
And I finished it, so I won't spoil anything for you.
Okay, let's not spoil it.
Yeah, no, we would never do that. So, at any rate, thank you so much for coming on. Much love, continued success. For those of you listening to this show, make sure you stick around till the end of the podcast. As usual, Dream Within a Dream will play in its entirety. Tristan, go enjoy your Game of Thrones. You have a wonderful night.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. There you go, ladies and gentlemen. Tristan right here on the Alt Review Podcast.
Love it. Getting that Game of Thrones in the day after. Avoided the spoilers.
Right. That's pretty ninja, because...
That's hard to do.
Social media was absolutely exploding with spoilers last night.
Right? I don't even know. I'm glad I watched it in real time, because I would have ruined it like it happened with me with the Avengers movie. That's why I still haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, did you hear that some dude got like beat down at work because he spoiled that movie for somebody?
Yeah,
it's like at a Domino's Pizza or something, and dude just kicked his ass.
Yeah, there's a couple people that got beat down because they spoiled Avengers. I'm like, this is literally 10 years of my life, random guy on Facebook.
Right.
10 years of my life.
And
I just...
20 movies. Like, what the hell?
Thanks for ruining it. Thanks. I'm not bitter.
No,
I'm really bitter.
You don't sound like it. Not at all.
I'm really bitter right now.
All right, brother. What do you got for me in reviews and recommendations?
Yeah, so we got a couple tonight, but the first is Mac DeMarco, Here Comes the Cowboy, and this is his newest release, and it's been out now for about week or week and a half or so, something like that, and so I wanted to have an opportunity to talk about this one. There's a couple songs that really popped out to me on this album, but first, I really want to talk about the musical diversity of this album. So he didn't maintain a consistent sound per se, but he stayed within his own sound. I know that sounds weird to hear, but it still came across as a consistent album. I like that he played with the sound a little bit, though. Some songs were a little bit more down, some were a little more up. I just really liked the way he approached this. So some of the songs I was really digging was Nobody, Choo Choo, Heart to Heart, and On the Square was probably my favorite. That's the one they're playing right now around. It's kind of reminds me a little bit of more of like a Seattle sounding alt. So that one's pretty cool. And you know, I thought it was a pretty solid album overall. I bounced between a 3 and a 4 on it, and I ended up going with the 4. I think that it deserved it. So up next we have Silver Sun Pickups. So Silver Sun Pickups just put out a new single called Freakazoid, and they're one of those bands that I just have always liked for their solid, just putting out solid music all the time. They never lack in quality, and so I had high expectations coming into Freakazoid, and I wasn't disappointed. I'll just be short with it. Freakazoid is a good track. Is it a great track? Nah, not necessarily, but it's a pretty good one. I would give it a 4 out of 5, and I'd highly recommend you check it out.
I struggle with that name, Freakazoid. That's some crap I said when I was 12 years old.
Yeah, I can kind of see that. I get that, but the song overall was pretty cool.
I'm just busting your balls, man.
last up we had Judah and the Lion Pep Talks, and so this album, I don't even know, because Spotify doesn't number how many songs are on here, and I'm not going to sit here and count them up, but it felt like there were 20 damn songs on this album, man. And that's not a bad thing, because I actually kind of enjoyed this album a decent amount. This is another album where it shifted a lot. So the first quarter of the album was like alt punk, and I was like, okay. And then it shifted to like alt with a blend of like folk to it, because there were some banjos going in it. I'm like, okay, this is interesting. And then it was like alt hip hop a little bit, because it had some rock, but like kind of like Beastie Boys. if that's a good comp for what I was hearing. And then at the end of it, was back to those kind of alt rock together as a package. It's weird to listen to it in a row. I will say that, because it kind of it shifts hard on you. Like, there's a song with Casey Musgraves, who's a known country artist, and then on another song, they're doing a freaking rap about "Don't Mess with My Mama," and it's like, it doesn't make sense, but it like, outside of that song, because that song was trifling. The rest of the songs I thought were pretty decent. So, but just as a whole, it's just so weird to listen to it together. But if you break it out into those chunks and listen to those together, it feels so much better. It's so much more digestible. So, like, that's how I did it, even though I know that's weird. And so I gave it a 4 out of 5.
It sounds like they couldn't decide what they wanted to be for this album, so they just put, like, 30 songs on it and try a little bit of everything.
It was a little like that, but it was all good. Like, everything they did was good. Like, the vocals were solid. There was one song that I really didn't like, actually, to Family/Best Is Yet To Come. It included this voicemail from his mom. Now, if his mom died or something and, like, he included this,
Just stop right now.
Like, I feel horrible for saying this if that's what had happened, but, like, he included this voicemail, and it was just a little too much for me. Like, I thought it was sappy, a little on the nose, you know? But, like, if something happened to his mom or his mom got sick and he included this, her talking about how great this album is, like, because of that, then my apologies. But I just thought it was a little on the nose.
All right, that's fair. What'd you give it?
4 out of 5.
Okay, you might have said that already, but I missed it. All right, moving on to feature of the week. We have an OG versus cover for you, and surprisingly enough, I think we're flipping script this week. I am taking the OG. He is taking the cover. We are talking about the song Last Kiss.
Yeah.
And I am going with J. Frank Wilson and the Cavaliers. Michael is going with Pearl Jam. Go ahead and give me your argument. I got to hear yours first. You already know what mine is.
All right. So I've not listened to the original nearly as much as I've listened to the cover. But I went ahead and re-listened to the original today. I will say that song is ahead of its time. I will give it that. But this cover, Eddie Vedder just elevates the quality of this song. With his guitar. I mean, the guitar is not that difficult, but it's a beginner guitar song, but his vocals on here are really good. He kind of made it into one of those anthems of the 90s that he kind of retook an old song and made it something different. And all while staying true to the original hints of the song, because, like, all the stuff he does in there, like the O's and all that stuff, that's all in the original. He changed a little bit of the lyrics, not very much, but he absolutely kept that flavor there. But I just think he elevated it a little bit with some grunge, spicy goodness, and kind of brought it to a different level. And one thing I will say, too, is when I was listening to the old version, the original, I guess I just forgot how much I was not a fan of the backing vocals in that song, because the backing vocals in that song was like a gnat just trying to get in my eyeball. And I was like, get out of here, because it was just all up. I don't even know what they were doing, but they're like, what? I was like, yeah, nope.
All right, here's my issue with the cover of this song is they didn't do enough musically to modernize it. And so what, and even the very first time I ever heard this song, I remember it like it was yesterday, because I remember thinking, if you put Eddie Vedder's voice on the original, it wouldn't sound a whole lot different, other than his voice sounds out of place on that track. In my opinion, they just didn't do... They tried to make it their own, but they didn't do a good enough job of making it their own to make it so that his very unique voice didn't sound out of place on a song from that far back. And so that was always my problem. And it's not that I'm a super huge fan of the original as much as it is, I just don't feel like Pearl Jam owned it enough to make his voice sound okay on that song.
It's definitely, if you were to ask me like what my top 10 Pearl Jam songs are, it's not in any of those. Like, it's not there. And I think that if it is in your list, I'm going to say this, and y'all can flip me the bird if you want. Y'all aren't real Pearl Jam fans. that's just my feeling on that. But it's not the best Pearl Jam song. It's not even the best cover that Pearl Jam has done. I will admit that. I just think it's still a pretty good cover, and I think it's a good attempt at a song that was essentially kind of feels almost like a doo-wop song a little bit in the original version.
And you're making my point right there. You have taken a doo-wop song and put Eddie Vedder's voice on it. That's where I struggle. It's just that simple.
Well, with the acoustic guitar, Eddie Vedder and acoustic guitar, like, you can't go wrong with that.
You can if it's a doo-wop song.
We're going to have to agree to disagree on this one.
Yeah, I guess so, because I mean, from day one, the first time I ever heard this song, his voice sounded out of place in this song. Had this been an original Pearl Jam song, I don't know that I would have been a fan of it, because it just seemed so far outside of what I was used to from Pearl Jam to that point when it was released.
Yeah, this was kind of one of Pearl Jam's first steps towards what Pearl Jam is today. Like, how much do I say here? I loved Pearl Jam. I don't love Pearl Jam now. Pearl Jam has become like a corporation now. They only play in baseball stadiums, and they only play like once every 3 years, and they don't hardly ever put out new music, and they're more of a, I don't know, they just don't do any of the stuff they used to do. And I just kind of feel like, I don't know, they aren't the band they used to be.
I will agree with that. And, you know, again, up to the point where they released this cover, they were effing Pearl Jam.
Well, yeah, they were one of the biggest bands on the planet, one of the best bands on the planet.
Right. Everything about Eddie Vedder's voice was, I don't give a crap what the song was. When Eddie Vedder started singing, you knew who the hell that was.
Right, but now they're McDonald's.
Billions and billions served.
Right, they're McDonald's. Like, that's what they are. They're plastic and they're fake. Like, I hate to say it, it's disrespectful, but...
The only reason you didn't want to say it is because you want me to turn you on them like I did you with Nirvana.
I got hate in my heart.
Oh, damn.
It's just because... I don't know. You look at bands like Foo Fighters and bands out there, like, they're still doing it. And then you have bands like Pearl Jam out there, like, play a stadium other than a baseball stadium. Like, that's stupid. It just makes no sense to me.
Sonic Temple, go get them. Go get them for next year.
Right. Play a music festival. Do something.
Speaking of Sonic Temple, I sent you an article from a radio station here in Columbus that they had. I won't play it on here because it's quite frankly crappy audio because it's from somebody's cell phone. But they covered Under Pressure by Queen, but their drummer, Taylor Hawkins, I believe is his name.
From the Foo Fighters, correct?
Yeah, yeah. He sang, and Dave Grohl played the drums. And they had the... I had it written down, but I took the paper off of the top of what I got here. The dude from the Struts.
Oh, yeah.
And they covered Under Pressure by Queen and Bowie. And listen, you're never going to hear me argue against Queen and David Bowie on anybody's cover. I don't give a crap who covers it. I'm not gonna. That is one of my favorite songs ever. But they didn't do a bad job at all. I mean, granted, again, it's somebody's cell phone video, so it was crappy audio, but you know, that seeing that video made me go, damn, I can't believe I missed that.
And that takes some stones to cover that song, so.
Yeah, big, giant, brass ones.
I like it.
All right, we got to move on to highlight the site. The site obviously being www.altreview.com. This week I am highlighting the Bloody Classics once again. That dropped 4 days ago. Oh, I gave a date. It's Monday. We record on Mondays. Sorry.
What?
It's dropped on May 16th and covered Iron Maiden, The Number of the Beast from 1982. So go check that out.
When Karis sent that to me, I was like, hell yeah! Some Iron Maiden!
Yeah, she's not even joking with that article, dude. Not at all.
Throw the freaking horns up. Let me see him.
Right. She's not playing around at all with that article.
Yes!
So go check that out. www.altreview.com. What are you highlighting from the site today, sir?
Highlighting Sunday Funday set list. So Nick is just bringing it with the Sunday Funday set list. And this week I wanted to bring up a couple of the people that he highlighted. Let me pull it up real quick. So I didn't have it already up in my hand. But he highlighted Cake, the Gaslight Anthem, Watershed, and a couple others. I'll let you read the rest of it. And I know Watershed were super appreciative of it and shared it, which was cool.
Yeah, I saw that on Watershed's Facebook page. They gave a little love to the Alt Review.
Right. I was like, hey, thanks. I appreciate that. But yeah, so definitely check out those Sunday Funday set lists because those are meant to serenade your Sundays when you're having your mojitos and Bloody Marys and doing all that fun stuff. That's the whole purpose of the article.
I like it. All right, brother. Well, that is all the time we have for today. Big thank you to Tristan for coming on. Make sure you stay tuned to the end of this podcast when we shut our big fat mouths and listen to Tristan's track Dream Within a Dream in its entirety. That is Michael. I am GP. We are Alt Review. Be good or be good at it. We are out.
All things alt, always.